Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kate.
You're listening to
Mysterious Mysteries 21.
We'll be talking about Amelia Dyer today and a little bit more of what we left off last week on.
Some of the material we will be discussing is very graphic.
Listener discretion is advised, so sit back,
relax,
and enjoy. Damn it, you did it right.
The amount of concentration
Alright, so this was written by Tony Rennell, September 28th, 2007. This is going to go into some detail. We are going to be backtracking. Some of the material that we talked about last week will be in this one as well, so it'll kind of give you like a refresher in a way. Alright, so we're going to go into the newspaper article that Amelia Dyer wrote saying wanted respectable woman to take young child. It was a sadly common request in Victorian Britain, where life was particularly hard for the unmarried mothers. The ad had been placed by 25-year-old Evelyn Mormon, who 2 months earlier in January of 1896 had given birth to in a boarding house in Shettleham to a little girl that she named Doris. Evelyn was a God-fearing farmer's daughter who had gone astray, left the farm for the city life, and restored to work as a barmaid in the saloon of the Plow Hotel, an old coaching inn. Who the fuck would name a hotel the Plow Hotel? That's a horrible name. Even though that's what's like probably going to happen, but...
Hotels now.
Yeah. With her blonde hair, busty figure, and quick wit, she was popular with its male customers, though which one of them made her pregnant has gone unrecorded. And now she was deserted with a baby she loved but knew she could not bring up on her own. She would have to find a foster home for little Doris to have her adopt out. In the language of the time, go back to work and hope in time you'll be able to reclaim your child. Quite by chance, next to her own ad was another saying, married couple with no family would adopt healthy child, nice country home, terms £10. It seemed to answer to her prayers, and she quickly contacted the name on the bottom as Mrs. Harding. From Oxford Road in Reading, Miss Harding replied in ecstatic terms, I should be glad to have a dear little baby girl, one I could bring up and call my own. She described her situation. We are plain, homely people in fairly good circumstance. I don't want the child for money's sake, but for company and home comfort. Myself and my husband are dearly fond of children. I have no child of my own. A child with me will have a good home and a mother's love.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is stuff that we've already covered in the first episode of this. So Miss Harding sounded every bit the respectful, caring woman that Evelina hoped to find for Doris, and she wrote once begging her not to consider anyone else until they had met. The reply came back, rest assured, I will do my duty by the dear child. I will be a mother as far as lies in my power. It is just lovely here, healthy and pleasant. There is an orchard opposite our front door. Evelyn could visit whenever she wished. The only issue between them was that Evelyn really wanted to pay a weekly fee for her daughter to be looked after, whereas Miss Harding preferred, indeed insisted, on a full adoption and a one-off payment in advance of £10, for which she states, I will take her entirely and she shall be of no further expense to you. Reluctantly, the desperate mother agreed. And a week later, Miss Harding, clutching a good warm shawl to wrap around the baby in the train, for it was bitter cold, arrived in Chettleham. Evelyn was surprised to discover that the woman she had been corresponding was more elderly than she had expected and thick-set beneath her long cape, but she seemed affectionate as she swaddled little Doris in the shawl. Evelyn handed over the cardboard box of clothes that she had packed, nappies, petticoats, frocks, nightgowns, and a powder box and the 10 pounds and received in return a signed receipt. She accompanied Miss Harding to Chettleham Station and then on to Gloucester, where she stood weeping amid the choking steam of the platform as a 5:20 p.m. train took her little girl away. She returned to her lodgings, a broken woman. Yeah, because you're never going to see the kid again.
Yeah.
That kid's dead. He's gone. A few days later, she had a letter from Miss Harding saying, "All is well." Evelyn wrote back straight away. She never received a reply. Evelyn and little Doris Mormon had fallen victim to one of the murkiest of all the many social evils in Britain just over a century ago, the baby farmers. Infant mortality was high and children's lives were cheap. Many families in straitened circumstances were happy to dispose of any infant to a new home and not to ask too many questions about where and to whom it was going. Some, like Evelyn, had every intention of retrieving their youngsters. All right, so Evelyn's name is actually Evelina, but I've already read last week and most of this one so far as Evelyn, so that's what we're going to stick with.
We're just going to change her name. It'll be all right.
It's for her protection.
Yeah, I don't think... We need to protect these people that died like half a century ago.
Yeah. So others are just as glad to see the back of them. One less mouth to feed, one less burden in the struggle to survive. They were prey to the unscrupulous... Okay, here we go with those fucking words. The immoral and the murderous, and none was quite as chillingly evil as the caring woman to whom Doris had just been entrusted. Miss Harding was one of many aliases of Amelia Dyer, a hard-faced brute of a woman whose crimes are recalled in a new book. In our children-centered society today, it is hard to comprehend a time when there were dead babies by the thousands, droves missing in missing metal lines, scores of Myra Hindless, and hardly anyone batted an eye. So these are also other baby farmers. So the Madelines, Myra Henley. It was in such an environment that Amelia Dyer plied her gruesome trade for more than a quarter of a century. She was the angel maker, as she once explained to her own little daughter, Polly, curious about the babies that kept appearing in the household and then disappearing. She was sending little children to Jesus, she said, because he wanted them far more than their mothers did. At 9 p.m., the train from Gloucester pulled into Paddington Station in London, not reading, as she had told Doris's mother, and Dyer struggled off carrying a carpet bag and a box of baby clothes and the baby herself. Whimpering in the shawl, she took a bus to Williston and got off at Mayo Road. At the door of number 76, she was greeted by her daughter Polly, now aged 23, a grown-up married woman. Once inside their rented rooms, Dyer left the lid of the workbasket and rifled through the tangle of threads and thimbles for some white-edged tape, enough to wrap twice around the soft fold of Doris's neck. Next, the tape was pulled tight, held for a second, and then tied in a knot. Doris would have struggled until her limbs went limp, her mouth open and closing in a last silent bid for life. Then she joined the scores. No one ever knew exactly how many, but Dyer had already sent to their maker.
A whole fucking lot?
Yeah. I don't understand how people can do that. How they can literally just take an innocent life like that and not have any kind of remorse.
Because this was 18th century and people were more fucked up than they are now.
That's true, I guess. So the two women bound the body in a napkin, then picked over the clothes in the cardboard box, keeping the good items, earmarked the rest for the pawnbroker from Evelyn's 10 pounds. Dyer paid the rent she owed to her unwitting landlady and even gave her a pair of child's boots as a present, like we talked about last week.
Yeah.
The very next day, Wednesday, April 1st, another infant, a year old, Harry Simmons, was brought to Mayo Road in return for a £10 payment. This time there was no spare tape to be found at the workbasket, so a knot was unpicked from Doris's neck and the same white length used to strangle him. The following evening, the two corpses were stuffed one on top of the other into Dyer's carpet bag and weighted down with bricks, and she took to the bus of Paddington and the train to Reading. There she lugged her heavy load through the street down to the river, a lonely spot she knew well, by a footbridge over the well at Carvesham Lock. In the darkness, she pushed the bag through the railing until it fell, and she heard it smack into the waters beneath. As she turned to leave, a man hurried past and passed on his way home and called out good night. Later, his evidence of the Old Bailey would help send 58-year-old Dyer to the gallows. Unlike many of her generation, Amelia Dyer was not the product of grinding poverty. She was born in a small village near Bristol in 1838, daughter of a master shoemaker, and learned to read and write and had to love literature and poetry. Again, the thing we went through last week. Trained as a nurse, grueling job, skilled and respected. From a midwife, she learned a way of earning a living, provided lodging for her own home for young women who in the unforgiving age were pregnant outside of wedlock. From the moment their bump began to show, they were shunned by polite society or sacked if they were in work. And if people don't know that term, sacked means you were laid off or fired. So for a fee, she offered to take these young women and see them through to the birth after the mothers left. Their unwitted babies would be looked after them as nurse children. The money differed. If the girl was from a well-off background, with parents anxious to keep her blight a secret, it might be as much as £80. Or, say, £50 if the father of the child was prepared to contribute in order to hush up his involvement. But more often, these were improvised girls, which meant even the workhouse wouldn't take them, and for them to deal might be done for a favor. I don't know if it's supposed to say for a favor or for a fiver.
Probably a fiver.
Okay. To cut costs, the farmed-out babies were starved and then reduced the aggravation of looking after them. They were sedated with easily available alcohol and opioids. Godfrey's cordial, a syrup, which we already talked about last week, put the child fast asleep, and if the child died, so be it. Most did, sooner or later. On such establishments was described with horror by the police officer who uncovered it in Brixton, London. In one room, five 3 and 5 4-week-old infants were lying in filth, 3 under a shawl on a sofa and 2 stuffed into a small crib.
Holy shit.
They were ashen-faced and emaciated, like miniature crones, their bones visible through transparent skin. Jesus. Coming home with a bunch of dead babies just all over your house. How does that not fuck with you? And the kid, Polly, why did it not fuck with her?
She.
I guess she was brainwashed in a way.
Yeah.
Like she was sending them to Jesus. Shut up.
My bad.
Better not have fucking COVID.
Huh?
I said you better not have COVID.
That was a sneeze, not a cough.
Same thing. It came out of the same area. They lay open mouth in a state of torpor, eyes glazed, scarcely human. What chilled the policemen was the silence. Instead of the noises to be expected from children of tender age, they are lying without a moan from their wretched lips. And apparently dying. So I guess they weren't dead yet. These were the starving ones that were...
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Imagine coming home to have like 14 babies there and it's just quiet.
That'd be eerie. So there was 5 infants. We're in another room in a slightly better condition because a weekly fee was still being exacted from them instead of a single premium that had been paid for the ones encouraging to die quickly. However immoral this business, and they usually stretch to those who dispose children there in full realization of their fate. It was one much in demand and lucrative. There was a pile of cash to be made here, as Amelia Dyer released. Her own particular refinement was not to bother with letting the children die through neglect or starvation, but to murder them straight away and pocket all the money. Year on year, Dyer dodged the police and the inspectors of the newly formed NSPCC. She was caught once after a doctor was called to certify a death of one child too many and release the alarm. But instead of manslaughter, she was convicted of causing a child to die by neglect and served 6 months hard labor in prison, an experience that nearly destroyed her. After she tried going back to nursing, she had spells of in the mental hospitals after suicide attempts, but also she returned to baby farming, eventually drawing her own family into the business. She stopped calling doctors to issue death certificates and dispose of the body secretly. They moved homes frequently, Bristol's, Reading, Cardiff, London, as often as they scented the police closing in or mothers and fathers were on their trail trying to reclaim their children. Killing stopped only after a bargeman piloting a cargo up the Thames at Reading saw a brown paper parcel lying in the shallows water near the bank. He finished it out with a boat hook, fished it out with a boat hook, pulled one end, and a leg and a tiny human foot appeared. The police inspection revealed the body was a little girl aged 6 to 1 year. White tape was knotted around her neck. One piece of the brown paper had a railway label on it from Temple Mead Station, Bristol, and the faint outline of handwriting. A name, Miss Thomas, an address in Reading could just be made out. 4 days later, on April 3rd, Good Friday, police raided the address and were immediately struck by the stench of human decomposition, though no body was found. But white tape was in the sewing basket, and in cupboards were bundles of telegrams arranging adoptions, pawn tickets for children's clothing, receipts for advertisement, letters from mothers inquiring after their little ones. In the past few months alone, they worked out 20 children at least have been placed in the care of Miss Thomas, now revealed as Miss Dyer. The police had arrived just in time. She was about to do moonlight flight again, this time to Somerset. A body found by the bargee turned out to be of Helena Fry, illegitimate offspring of Mary Fry, a servant girl from Bristol and a well-to-do local merchant. The child had been handed over to Dyer at Bristol Temple Mead Station on March 5th, but when Dyer got home to Reading that evening, all she had with her was a brown paper parcel 2 feet long. She hid it in the house until, after 3 weeks, the smell became unbearable. Then she was seen leaving the house with the parcel, saying she was going to the pawn shop. In fact, she threw it in the bundle in the river, but it did not sink, as the bargee discovered. The river is now dragged. 3 tiny bodies were found, then the carpet bag with Doris and Harry inside, her last victims. The next day, Evelyn Mormon, whose name had cropped up in Dyer's correspondence, was brought to Reading to identify her daughter on the mortuary slab. It had been a mere 11 days since she had entrusted her children to Miss Harding. Damn. Not even 2 weeks. And... so she was in perfect health when I sent her away, was all the distraught women could mutter. Dyer was hung at Newgate Prison after a trial of which her plea of insanity was rejected. Her daughter gave graphic evidence that ensured her conviction while going unpunished herself for reasons still not clear. The jury was out for just 4.5 minutes before condemning her. The details of what had done caused a scandal Stricter adoption laws gave local authorities the power to police baby farms and stamp out abuse. Personal ads in newspaper were to be scrutinized. So back then, I did a little research on this last night, actually. Baby farmers back then were like, in a way, like an orphanage.
Oh, okay.
So, and that's pretty much what all of them were called, were baby farmers, because they would raise them just like a farmer would raise their crops, but not feeding it to the community.
See, I mean, this one probably was.
I mean, she could have got away with it if she was doing that. She just ground all the babies into, like, meat and shit and just start selling meat. I highly doubt anybody would have suspected. I mean, Sweeney Todd, kind of, but...
That was more recent.
Yeah. So, that's where the baby farmers term came from. It wasn't the fact that, you know, they were brought to a place to die. It was being brought to a place to either... You're going to babysit for the foreseeable future.
Or
you're just going to take over the child, all the rights to that child, as like an adoption agency, almost. But baby trafficking did not stop. 2 years after Dyer's execution, railway workers inspected carriages shunting into a siding at Newton Abbott from the Plymouth Express found a parcel tied up with string. Inside was a 3-week-old girl, cold and wet, but just alive. She was the daughter of a widow, Jane Hill, and had been given to a woman named Miss Stewart for 12 pounds. The little one would have a good home, a parent's love and care, Miss Stewart had written. Then she had picked up the baby at Plymouth and dumped her on the next train. Who was Miss Stewart? None other than Polly, Amelia Dyer's daughter.
And don't keep that in the family.
Yeah, that's a bad. Alright, this is some of the court readings from Amelia Dyer. I don't know why I crossed it out. I think it's because we kind of talked about it in the first episode of this. Alright, and this is coming from... Well, you'll find out. That a man should kill a child is appalling. In May of 1896, Amelia appeared in court charged with the murder of a 4-month-old baby girl named Doris Mormon and a boy, Harry Simmons. Her plea that she was insane was not accepted, the jury taking only 4.5 minutes to find her guilty, and she was sentenced to death. Confident of a reprieve, doubtless because of her age, she was 57, she spent her time in the condemned cell praying and writing poems, one of which survived. Alright, so this is one of her poems. By nature, Lord, I know with grief, I am a poor fallen leaf, shriveled and dry and near unto death, driven with sin as with a breath. But if by grace I am made new, washed in the blood of Jesus too, like to a lily I shall stand, spotless and pure as his right hand. And not content with the hypocritical tone of the verse, she had the appalling gall to sign it mother.
Good God.
Alright, so, in accordance with the regulations, which stipulated the execution should take place at 8 a.m. on the first day after the intervention of 3 Sundays from the day of which the sentence was passed. In this case, the 10th of June of 1896. Amelia herself was taken into care by, I guess, James Billington, the public executioner, a muscular ex-coal miner, having temporarily adopted her. And he escorted her up to the steps of the scaffold behind the high walls of Newgate Prison, and there guided her to the trapdoors where he hooded her. My bad.
It's all good.
The prison bell had already been tolling for the past 15 minutes and would continue to do so for the same length of time after the execution had taken place. Crowds had gathered outside waiting to see their regulatory black flag, which would be raised on the prisoner's flagpole at the moment of the trapdoor's opening. And also within the next few minutes, to read the certificate of death, which had been displayed near the principal entrance of the prison. They did not have long to wait, for Billington, never one to linger, had no doubt recalling the manner of which Amelia Dyer had strangled her helpless charges. Positioned his vision of a tape, the noose, around her neck, and swiftly operated the drop, sending the cold-blooded killer plumbing into the depths of the pit. Whether Amelia's spirit departed with her through is another matter, it being rumored that her ghost haunts the chief warden's office for some years following her execution. I highly doubt a spirit is going to haunt something that she wasn't really there for that long for. Yeah. Anything, she would have haunted one of the houses that she stayed in the longest.
Maybe the one that had, like, 20 babies in it?
Yeah.
Something a little bit, you know, more connected to the person, not the warden's office for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Alright, so that's actually all we had. I thought that was going to go a lot longer, but it did not. So that's pretty much a gist of Amelia Dyer. She was a bitch who killed people's kids for money. There's a lot more information you can look up. I want to say there was a YouTube, I don't remember who did it, a YouTube video that went over Amelia Dyer's, but I think they just went over the basics. We kind of went into a little bit more detail. That's why there's a lot more information. But yeah, so that was Amelia Dyer. And who knows, maybe in the future we might do an episode to follow up with this one for Polly.
Polly, see what happens to her. She continues.
Yeah. Yeah, she continued it. And she wasn't, I mean, in all the documents I have right here, she wasn't condemned to prison or anything. So I'll have to do some research on her. What was her name? Polly Thomas?
So.
Gotta find it now.
You know, you would think, you know, with nowadays, it's kind of hard to do something like this. It's hard in itself to do something like this nowadays, like, stupid hard, because of all the...
Well, we got all the forensics and all that crap,
DNA
so
and everything like
hiding
that.
Shit like that is slim to none.
And then you go back to this, you know, you go back to, like, the 1800s, it's like, why, how did... They were calling the cops on themselves. How did they not get found out earlier? And then you realize, oh yeah, it's the 1800s.
Yep. I can't remember her name.
Hey, maybe her last name's Graff. Polygraph. Killing execution since.
Polygraph. She would name her kid fucking Polly. It's something you name your bird.
Polly does not want that kind of cracker.
Jesus Christ, how far was it in here? But it didn't seem like it was that far. Part two, okay. But yeah, we might do one on Polly if I can find enough information to actually do one. Or that might actually just be a bonus episode starting after October. We might actually do a little bit more research on some of our past ones that we've talked about and do bonus episodes for those people who want to know more about information over what we discussed in the past.
So we can pick and choose and find out what...
Well, I know there's... I don't remember all the episodes, honestly. This is number 12. I'm sure we can. I mean, Jerry McFadden, there's no information. What am I looking at?
Looked up the Godfrey's cordial. Scroll down and look at the little hyperlinks.
Hmm. Okay. Godfrey's cordial was a patent medicine containing tincture of opium in a sweet syrup which was commonly used as a sedative to quieten infants and children in the Victorian England. Used mostly by mothers working in agriculture groups or industry. It ensured that she could work the maximum hours of her employment without being disturbed by her infant, and thus increasing the family income. It was also used by nurses and baby minders to enable them to neglect their duties if they wished. Baby minders. That was a new term.
Same thing.
Yeah, same baby, thing. Baby farmer. The original formula was named after apothecary Thomas Godfrey of Hudson in Hertfordshire. After his death in 1721, without leaving a clear heir to his work, others claimed to have had the formula, and it was mass-produced across England. Some also ascribed the medicine to Ambrose Haeckwitz, also an apothecary, at ground the same time, was changed his name to Godfrey and did business in Southampton Row.
So there's a lot of stuff behind that.
Yeah.
Weird.
Godfrey's cordial had been recognized as leading to fatal cases of opium poisoning. However, it continued to be made and used until early 20th century. At least in part due to the ease of which it could be manufactured. It was reportedly sold in enormous quantities in the 18th century England, a time span that had been popularly referred as the Golden Age of the Psyche, due to the widespread availability of consumption of enormous amounts of proprietary medicines. Its low cost and a lack of public knowledge about infant management further increased its popularity. Though many cases of infants' death had been conclusive links to the indiscrimination used of the medicine by mothers and nurses, exact numbers are hard to report. Those who survived often reportedly had a severely damaged physical constitution. In 1857, with ill-advised opioid usage reaching alarming levels, a preliminary bill was put forward which classified opium as a poison. This was intended to severely restrict the sale of such compounds, but it failed to pass throughout Parliament. After being subject to intensive lobbying by trading chemists, it was also widely criticized as an impractical solution for all overall perspectives. A much diluted version of the original proposed bill was finally implemented as a Pharmacy Act 1868, which limited the sale of opium derivatives to registered chemists and legally qualified apothecaries. Expectedly excused patients' medicines and thus Godfrey's cordial from its purview.
And that's how they were killing a bunch of the babies. Apparently.
Yep.
Like, all the old bottles you see of all the old medicines, just like 50% alcohol, 5% opium, 15% heroin.
Yep.
What?
Yep.
Take one teaspoon. I don't want to take a drop.
Well, heroin used to not be legal, or not used to be illegal. Heroin was actually used in a lot of medicines. I mean, the heroin nowadays, that's not what it was back then. Still trying to figure out Polly's name. Can you just look it up? I don't feel like going through 80 sheets of paper. Just put daughter's name, Amelia Dyer's daughter's name. Oh, wait, I think Arthur Palmer was discharged. Nope. I thought I found it, and then it was not it.
See, an Ellen Thomas and a Mary Ann Dyer.
What'd you put in the search? You put in Amelia Dyer's kid?
Ellen Thomas, Mary Ann Polly Dyer. Also known as Polly. Mary Ann.
So, Mary Ann Polly Dyer?
Mary Ann, air quotes, Polly Dyer.
So, Polly probably wasn't her actual name. It was probably like a nickname.
Says here her name was actually Mary Ann.
Okay. So yeah, we might do a bonus episode with Polly Dyer in the future. Don't know when that's going to happen. But that's all I have for Amelia Dyer. A piece of shit who deserved a lot worse than just being hung.
Yeah, they should have got the rope wrong.
Alright, well, as y'all all know, we're on Pocket Cast, Radio Public, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcast, and CastBox.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Mysterious Mysteries 21. So please go over there, give us a like, follow, let us know where we can improve, or where we can keep fucking up, like me on the intro.
And me with simple big words. I think my mind just over analyzes the words I read and make it something that is not.
It's like whenever you're texting and you sit there and you know you have spell check but you don't want to go back to get that one word right. It's like, no, I know this is how it's spelled.
Yep. I do that all the time.
Completely different.
Also, we have listeners in the Philippines, Switzerland, Australia, India, Germany, Canada, and 17 states in the U.S. So thank you all to our listeners. I'm going to try to get the Patreon set up. I mean, it already is set up as of right now. I think the first fee is like $3 a month. And that gets you a shout out by name, because you have to put your name whenever you go to the Patreon and you give us money. So anybody who wants to, the Patreon page is linked in our Facebook account and in our Instagram account. You might have to search for it. If you cannot find it, send us a message on Facebook or Instagram and I can get you that link sent to you. It is not required to become a Patreon, but eventually the bonus episodes will be only Patreons only. So
just heads up.
Yep. So $3, you get a shout out. $5 is level 2, you get shout outs and you get bonus episodes. Level 3 is $10, you get shout out, bonus episodes, and I honestly don't know what else. I wanted to do something else. I want to say the sticker of our logo will get sent to you. So y'all still have time, and like I said, I will be posting our Patreon page on Facebook and Instagram. It should be already be on there, but I'll post it again. Thank y'all for listening. That's all I've got today.
That's all I've got.
Out of it today. Unless we just got done mowing in 100 degree weather.
Yeah.
So.
But no. Thank y'all for listening.
Sorry for the rambles. I want to try to make every episode at least 35 minutes or longer.
Yeah.
Thank y'all, and we look forward to next week with a new topic we'll be discussing, and I don't know what that is yet, so it's gonna be a surprise for everybody.
It's gonna be good.
You know, honestly, I was thinking maybe we could do like a like 50 of the world's strangest coincidences or conspiracies, like do an hour long podcast but with like 50 different things.
Yeah.
And
like rapid fire.
Well, I mean, and they're not going to get a lot of details on those subjects, so if people want us to go into detail, it gives them 50 options.
Yeah.
To like, hey, I want to hear more about this, or hey, I want to hear more about that. So that might actually help get people to actually, I don't know,
speak.
We know you're listening. You need to speak. So far, it's just only been
Not like us. Don't fuck up the words.
Or fuck up the words. I'll read them fucked up anyways. We've had a couple comments, but It's people I talk to on a daily basis. It's family. No offense, Mom. But... Well, thank y'all. Y'all have a good day, night, wherever you are in the world right now. And we will see y'all next week.
See y'all next week.